Cortez, Ms. Gambino.
Good morning, Judge Posner, Judge Sykes, and Judge Hamilton. Arturo Valdez was a nonviolent offender. He was convicted of his first drug offense in this particular case, and he was charged and convicted of being involved in a single transaction that involved 500 grams of heroin. He was sentenced, however, based on a finding by the judge that he should be held responsible for at least 3 and no more than 10 kilograms of heroin. And it is our position that there are 3 problems with this finding. First of all, it violates his Fifth and Sixth Amendment rights, first under Allain versus the United States. Secondly, because the evidence that was relied upon was not, in fact, reliable or subject to challenge. And finally, as a policy matter, legal scholars and Justice Breyer of the Supreme Court have said that drug quantity is not a good basis for determining somebody's moral culpability. And the end result in this case is that Mr. Valdez's sentence was essentially doubled based on information that he didn't have an appropriate opportunity to challenge. With respect to the application of Allain versus the United States, if that case is going to mean anything, the Supreme Court has said that any fact that increases the maximum or the minimum penalty is essentially an element of the offense and must be submitted to the jury and proved beyond a reasonable doubt. In a drug case, there's a stepladder system in which the critical fact that makes a case aggravated is the quantity of drugs. So you start with 0, you have a 5-year mandatory for which you have to qualify, and a 10-year mandatory for which you have to qualify. So if you ignore that and say that it doesn't really matter about these stair-step qualifications and rely simply on the preponderance test under the guidelines, then you're disconnecting the guidelines from the statute.
Didn't he admit a quantity that would get him above the statutory minimum?
The agent alleged that he provided a statement in which he said so, and he contested that statement from the beginning of the case. He, in fact, went through the process of having a motion to suppress statements and consistently throughout the case denied that he made that statement.
Is there any sign that the district court thought the statutory minimum was more than 5 years?
No, the judge didn't say that the statutory minimum was more than 5 years.
So your concern is with the guidelines, right?
Well,
the findings that are used to raise the guideline range.
My concern is the disjunct between the guidelines and the statute.
Right. But the objection is that is the finding of 3 to 10 kilos, right?
That's absolutely
which
right.
Which raises the guideline, actually, if I recall correctly, up above even the 10-year minimum, right?
That's correct.
So, but we're between the statutory minimum and maximum. Why doesn't I think I understand your logic, but why doesn't that logic suggest that the Supreme Court applied the wrong remedy in Booker? As in Booker, the court said the answer to these problems, and whether it's something that raises a maximum guideline, and I guess Allain would say for a lower guideline, a guideline minimum would be the guidelines are advisory.
Well, that doesn't solve the problem when you have mandatory minimums. I think that goes to the problem.
But we're within the mandatory minimum.
We're within the mandatory minimum, except if you take into consideration what the Supreme Court says is that that these facts create aggravated offenses, and that it's not an answer to say that, well, you could be sentenced under the guidelines to this sentence anyway, even though we have, in fact, here this mandatory minimum. Basically, what it seems that they've set up is a system whereby if the drug quantity is an element of the offense, and if in order to get to the 10 years you have to establish a certain drug quantity, then what you've got...
No, to get to 10 years you do not have to establish the higher quantity unless you want it to be a mandatory minimum. But I thought we'd established here that the sentence here was above the mandatory minimum for the amount that he admitted.
Well, this points out the essential problem, with what's going on with Elaine. Because you can't divorce the guidelines
I'm
read in that
to,
way.
Well, I'm trying to understand how you think Elaine and Booker interact.
I think they interact badly. And I think that when you have the Supreme Court saying that in order to get to, if for instance, Mr. Valdez had gone to trial, the government would not be able to sentence him based on more than 10 years unless it was able to prove at trial.
Wait a minute. What was the statutory maximum for the quantity he admitted it? Wasn't it 40 years?
Certainly it was 40 years.
No, okay.
But if he had gone to trial and the jury had not found him guilty, that the government had sought to have him found guilty of the 3 to 10 and the jury had refused to do that, then they would not be able to sentence him based on this 3 to 10.
Sure they would, under the guidelines.
But see, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's what you're telling me is that Booker doesn't make any sense.
I'm telling you, yes, that what Booker threw
which Elaine, is a bit of a problem for us. If you're asking us to hold that Booker doesn't make sense, it's a challenge. But if there's another way to understand this, I'd like to hear it.
Well, there is. What I'm trying to explain is that if you divorce the sentencing guidelines from the statutory minimums that are put in place in the context of a drug case, in Elaine, it was guns. And the aggravating factor was whether someone possessed a gun, whether they used a gun, whether they brandished a gun. And what they did at sentencing was sentence the man based on a finding by a preponderance that he had brandished the gun. The court said, no, that's not the answer. The question is who makes the decision. And the judge makes the decision when it comes to aggravating factors. In the context of a drug case, the aggravating factor is the quantity of drugs. So it's not an answer to say, well, yes, under the 5 to 40, we can use the preponderance of the evidence and sentence under the guidelines to the same 10 years. We have to have the jury make that decision.
Okay.
And
but
since the
Booker said, though, for raising guidelines, not minimums, but for
right.
raising guidelines, because they're advisory, preponderance of the evidence findings by the judge on a record that is not subject to the rules of evidence is okay.
That's what they said.
That looks like what happened here.
But that's inconsistent with what the court is now saying in Elaine with respect to drug cases. Because, for instance, if the factor that the judge wanted to find by preponderance was whether somebody died during the course of the drug transaction or whether force was used, that wouldn't be an issue. But because under the statute, the drug quantity acts as an aggravating factor to create a whole different offense, what you're saying is you could just avoid that whole process, avoid the court's concern with the Sixth Amendment decision-making on aggravating factors, and backdoor it essentially with the guidelines. So to the extent that you characterize that as a Booker problem, I would say, well, yes, it's an inconsistency between the court's holding in Booker and what's going on with Elaine. And that if you apply the logic of Elaine in this case, it's a stair step. In order to establish 10 years or more, you have to be able to submit to a jury and prove beyond a reasonable doubt a certain quantity of heroin, which was not done in this case.
But, well.
So that's the point with respect to Elaine. And I agree with you that it is not consistent with Booker, but you can't have the logic of Elaine coexist peacefully with the application of the guidelines in that sense. But
well, that's an argument. You can make the same argument between Apprendi and Booker, right? Between statutory maximums and guideline maximums.
It's a similar argument, yes, but it's not as problematic.
The Supreme Court has repeatedly said that a lower court can't deem a Supreme Court decision overruled merely because there's a later decision of the Supreme Court that is inconsistent with it.
That's
so correct. Elaine can't invalidate Booker.
No, it can't. But if you are going to decide this case consistent with Elaine, then you can't say that it's okay to backdoor Elaine by applying the guidelines without respect to the mandatory minimums that are set up by statute. And even if you are not happy with that particular reason for error in this case, there was simply no reliable evidence submitted on which to base this essential doubling of Mr. Valdez's sentence. The court relied in part on the alleged admissions of Mr. Valdez, but she said that if that was by itself, she wouldn't rely on it.
But when the cooperator had him make the call, he obviously had done this before, right?
Well, the fact that he had done it before doesn't say anything about quantity. And, in fact, the circumstances of the arrest would suggest quite the opposite, because if he was an experienced heroin dealer who was dealing regularly with a kilogram of heroin and was given a half a kilogram, he would have at that moment recognized that he had been significantly shorted and demanded the rest of his heroin. The fact that it took the agent to tell him that he had been shorted and that he needed to call the supplier in order to get this straightened out would suggest not that he's an experienced dealer in a kilogram quantity, but that he's quite inexperienced. So,
okay, thank you, Ms. Gambino. Time has expired. Mr. Otluski?
Good afternoon, and may it please the Court. The sentencing court's drug quantity finding at sentencing was entirely consistent with the lien. As the defendant acknowledged at sentencing, during the change of plea hearing, and now in appeal, the five-year mandatory minimum that was applied was imposed consistent with the lien. Now, what they've said is that a lien somehow changed the landscape, and essentially we should throw aside Booker. Well, the Supreme Court made it clear in a lien, sort of anticipating the defendant's argument, that that's just not true. You look at Section C and footnote 2 of the Supreme Court's decision in a lien, it stated that its holding was not applying to judicial fact-finding that occurred at sentencing. And that's what happened here. The judge made the fact-finding that Mr. Valdez was responsible for 3 to 10 kilograms of heroin based on its own facts and did not submit that question to the jury because it hadn't ever gotten that far. Mr. Valdez had already pleaded guilty to possession of 500 grams. And that brings us to the second point, whether there was sufficiently reliable evidence to support the court's sentencing determination in the first place. And as this court's already acknowledged, we have, one, the defendant's own admissions that he was moving a kilogram of heroin a week for the last 2 months. That statement was corroborated in 3 different ways. First, his own statements on the recording to the cooperator, using the code word China for heroin and knowing exactly what the cooperator wanted when he was able to just ask for China briefly. The defendant's own statements to his source, who acknowledged that he had shorted the defendant and said that that was all he happened to have on hand at that time, as well as the cooperator's debrief with law enforcement when the cooperator stated that this particular defendant had provided him with approximately 3 kilograms of heroin and gave some specific facts about both pricing, amounts, and times that he had paid the defendant for that heroin. For those reasons, Your Honor, the government asks that this court affirm the sentence imposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adelson. Ms. Gambino, do you have anything further?
With respect to the reliability of the evidence, the problem with the approach here is that if you rely on a cooperator's statement that the judge never gets to see and that nobody ever gets to examine, then there isn't any indication of reliability. Cooperators can say whatever they'd like to say, and without being able to test what they do say, especially when it's inconsistent with what the defendant said and with the other evidence, then you're left in a position where a person's sentence can be essentially doubled based on the unchallenged allegations of somebody that never appears in court. We ask that the sentence be remanded for resentencing.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Fisher. Last case, and we thank Mr. Adelson.